This week in KMA Land, KMA Land firefighters battle Randolph grain elevator fire. Shenandoah holds Memorial Day service. Page County residents question rural bridges closure. Shenandoah City Council okays SRO agreement. And we'll have a preview of Tuesday's Iowa primary. I'm Mike Peterson. Firefighters from all over KMA Land battled a grain elevator fire in Randolph Wednesday afternoon. Departments from Fremont, Page, Mills, and Montgomery counties, along with Nebraska City, responded to the fire at one of the grain legs or elevators at the Heartland Co-op facility in Randolph at 109 Depot Street. Fremont County EMA Director Clayton Long told KMA News initial reports of the fire and a possible explosion came in at around 2:20 p.m., with crews from Randolph, Tabor, and Sydney initially dispatched to the scene. Long says arriving crews confirmed black smoke billowing from the top of the grain elevator.
And once they got to the scene, they determined it was too tall for them to be able to adequately put water on. Kind of a tricky situation, too, with the ladders to access it. The fire was right above them, so a call was put out to Glenwood and Shenandoah, who have aerial ladder trucks with 100, 110-foot ladder lengths to get up and adequately provide water to the flames.
Ultimately, Long says 11 fire departments responded to the incident, including Randolph, Tabor, Sydney, Farragut, Riverton, Hamburg, Shenandoah, Glenwood, Malvern, Essex, and Nebraska City. While aerial trucks from Glenwood and Shenandoah provided much of the fire suppression efforts, several departments ran tanker trucks to and from the scene to provide adequate water.
There were several and numerous tanker trucks that were going to Tabor to provide water. Since Randolph is in a water restriction, they had people at the wells, at the well houses, and they were all keeping track of water levels, as the case in Tabor too. And there was a contingency to set up a separate point of distribution for water if we got to the threshold they had in mind.
Long says crews were on the scene until nearly 8 p.m. Wednesday. Long adds Fremont County EMA Director Brian Hammond provided a drone, which he says gave crews a bevy of useful information.
Provided real-time footage, from an elevated perspective, but it also had thermal imaging, so crews could see inside of the metal infrastructure of where the hot spots were and see where the fires were spreading to. And then it also had a thermometer on it, so we were able to see what was getting hotter and what was cooling off in correlation to where water was getting put.
Long says no injuries reported and that all personnel were accounted for. He notes crews from Randolph and Tabor were called back out to the co-op at around 1:30 Thursday morning for a fire at the base of the grain lake, which was quickly extinguished. At around 6:30 that morning, Long says smoke was reported from a nearby grain bin that had not been an issue during the initial response. It was cut open and extinguished. Long commended the efforts of all agencies that assisted in the response.
There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of people with different objectives in mind. Incident Command did a wonderful job with their unified command of tasking different jobs for different crews, and everybody was able to move in a fluid motion.
Long says the cause of the fire remains under investigation to this time. Shenandoah residents Monday remembered the nation's war dead. Shenandoah High School's Brass Quintet with America the Beautiful opening the traditional Memorial Day services at the Rose Hill Cemetery's Tomb of the Unknowns. Hundreds of American flags dotted the cemetery and fluttered in the high winds welcoming the ceremony's attendees. In his keynote address, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen paid tribute to the volunteers erecting the flags prior to Memorial Day. As mayor, McQueen says the flags are a source of pride.
To see the number of volunteers to come out here every year and put these flags up is just really touches you. And I want to thank every one of them personally that come out, put them up, that come out on Saturday to put the little flags up and then turn around tomorrow or later today and take them down. So you have my thanks because this makes this cemetery just one of the most beautiful in Southwest Iowa.
Though the names of deceased veterans scattered across the cemetery indicate a nationwide loss, McQueen says Memorial Day marks a personal loss for those left behind.
For the one woman, Memorial Day brings thoughts of the father she never knew, She recalled as a young child learning to pray the words, "Our Father who art in heaven," thinking she was talking to her own father. For others, it is the memory of the last kiss as the train pulled away, a last wink and a parting wisecrack from a bigger brother, a brave smile from a son who seemed like a boy. And then there was that phone call that came.
Names of eight veterans deceased since Memorial Day of last year were read, and one new flag honoring a deceased veteran joined others lining the Tomb of the Unknowns. Members of Shenandoah's DAR, VFW, World War I Veterans Committee, Elks Lodge No. 1122, and American Legion Auxiliary placed the traditional wreaths at the tomb. Shenandoah's American Legion Color Guard closed the ceremony with a rifle salute prior to the playing of taps. Some Page County residents are expressing concerns about the closing of a rural bridge. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors heard public comment over the closure of a bridge on M Avenue, a dirt road just south of Montgomery Page Street over the Tarkeel River. The board approved a resolution authorizing the closure at its regular meeting last week after County Engineer J.D. King indicated the structure is no longer suitable for vehicle traffic. County resident Brad Wright and his wife Becky were among the residents speaking during the public comment period on the matter. Primarily, Wright said, they would like the county to reconsider removing some of the bridge planks on either end of the structure and use other forms of signage to indicate the closure.
If you want to close it, we would hope that you would consider closing it with signage, even if you had to put a chain across or barricade or something to limit it so full-size vehicles couldn't go across. We get that. And we understand that you want to do something that is well-posted so fools don't go zooming across there, because again, we know who's driving vehicles out there. But
while acknowledging the need to close the bridge to heavier vehicle traffic, Wright says the structure is still used frequently for other forms of travel.
We walk it, we ride bikes across it, we do everything in that area. Again, my wife's lived there all her life, so again, we would hope to be able to at least continue to pass across it. We understand it's not up to holding heavy vehicles anymore, but would ask you to reconsider removing some of the planks on either end and look at other options.
At last week's meeting, King indicated the structure had reached the end of its useful life and that it was not feasible to replace it based on recommendations from a bridge consultant. He notes it's also been weight limited for several years, adding that barricades alone likely wouldn't prevent vehicles from using the bridge.
We don't consider that a very good option. People will try to circumvent our closure. It's been 3 ton for 10 years, and there's no weight limit below 3 ton that's in use in the county.
King says he's hesitant to sanction any travel on the bridge due to concerns about its substructure. While no formal action was taken Tuesday, each board member agreed to go out and look at the bridge with the engineer before bringing the discussion back to the boardroom at its June 9th meeting. Shenandoah School District will have a law enforcement presence in its buildings for another 3 years. At its regular meeting Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council unanimously approved an amendment to its SRO 28E agreement with the Shenandoah School District with a new term expiration date of June 30, 2029 and cost estimates. The partnership began in 2023 after both entities supported the agreement and former Atlantic Police Chief Dave Erickson was hired as school resource officer. Shenandoah City Administrator A.J. Lyman tells KMA News Tuesday evening's amendment primarily outlines the cost sharing between the city and school district for the next 3 years.
The school pays for 3/4 of that officer's salary and benefits. So that's really what the agreement entails, what the amendment entails is just those next 3 years of that, what that cost estimate will be. We bill for actuals, so it's based on an estimate.
Lyman feels the SRO agreement has been a success between the city and school district.
Officer Erickson out there seems to be very well integrated with the school, with the community. I know just talking to my kids, they know who he is. They're always happy to see him, you know, even outside of school and things like that. So I think a really, really good success story we've got there. Great partnership with the school, you know, working through any little rubs or whatever here and there that pop up. We seem to smooth those out really quickly. And, it's just great. It's a good presence to be there and to be involved in the community in that way.
Lyman adds that Erickson also assists with other various duties outside of the school.
The city absorbs the other 25% of that for the time that he's not in school. Obviously, he's out patrolling, doing other stuff. He does the camping with the cops every summer. Just a good program. And then, we use them otherwise as an officer.
The Shenandoah School Board ratified the agreement at its regular meeting earlier this month. With less than a week before the June 2nd Iowa primary, candidates crisscrossed KMA land on last-minute campaign swings. As part of his Rally for Randy tour, Republican gubernatorial candidate Randy Feenstra stopped at Barley's Bar in Counts Bluffs Wednesday, where he received endorsements from multiple Southwest Iowa state and federal lawmakers and met with supporters. Feenstra is among a crowded field of candidates seeking the Republican nomination for governor in Tuesday's primary after Kim Reynolds announced last year she would not seek re-election. A former state senator and current 4th District congressman, Feenstra says he wants to bring his track record from the State House and U.S. Capitol to the governor's office.
As you know, I was in the state senate for 12 years, serving with wonderful people that we have here. I wrote the largest tax cut that was signed by Governor Reynolds in Iowa history at that time. Then I came, worked in Congress, and just so incredible to be with President Trump and all that he's done. I mean, we shut down the border, deporting illegals, signed Sarah's Law. We wrote the largest tax cut in U.S. history. We got all these things going, passing the Farm Bill, passing E-15, it goes on and on. But now I want to deliver for Iowans as governor.
Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Josh Turek was in rural Page County Wednesday afternoon seeking support from KMA Land's rural residents. Flanked by area supporters, Turek announced the formation of a Farmers for Turek coalition at the Seth Watkins Farm south of Clarinda late Wednesday afternoon. Currently a state representative in Iowa's 20th House District, Turek faces State Senator Zach Walls in Tuesday's Democratic primary. Turek says farmers across the state are hurting because of President Trump's policies. Rather than calling it a farm crisis, Turek calls the situation Farmageddon.
As I've been traveling around, actually, the word that I've heard over and over and over from our farmers is the word betrayal, is that they have largely supported Trump. And it's because of these tariffs that we have seen that have absolutely decimated and led our commodities prices to being upside down, our farmers to not be able to make money in nearly a decade.
Turek also attacked Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, who faces Jim Carlin in Tuesday's Republican primary, for her support of Trump's tariffs. That sound means it's time for a special preview of Tuesday's Iowa primary, featuring some of the local races to watch. Over the past few weeks, KMA News has interviewed candidates from a variety of state, federal, and county-wide races in our Meet the Candidate series on KMA's Morning Line program, including those running for Republican nominations in three Page County Supervisors districts. Three candidates are running for the GOP nomination in Page County's 4th District, including incumbent Judy Clark. Clark served 30 years in the county auditor's office, including 24 as auditor, before retiring in 2011. Clark was appointed District 3 supervisor following Chuck Morris's resignation in January 2023, then won a special election for the post in November of that year. Clark says she first decided not to run for re-election, but with the voter-approved expansion to 5 supervisors, Clark says she decided her experience was needed in the county boardroom.
I decided, because of going to 5 supervisors, which the people of Page County voted in, that there was a possibility that we could have 5 brand new supervisors who didn't know anything about county government who would be running. And so I thought, well, maybe I can help with my vast knowledge and help those people who are coming in to run the county as 5 supervisors.
Clark faces 2 challengers in Tuesday's primary. A Clarinda native, Jamie Shore, graduated from Clarinda High School in 2002. He went on to Drake University, where he graduated with a bachelor's degree in public relations in 2007. After spending 3 years in the banking industry, Shore returned to Clarinda in 2010. Shore was elected to the Clarinda City Council in November 2013 and purchased White Wheels clothing in 2017. Shore says he's running for county supervisor because it's the next challenge and that he cares about the community.
Being a small business owner, like I talked, and serving on the city council, I've had real experience dealing with budgets, infrastructure, and long-term planning. I do think it's healthy for government to have fresh perspectives and new ideas, and I think I can bring that to the table. So with a combination of my business experience, local government knowledge, and a different way of looking at challenges, I think I can be pretty successful in the position.
Arriving in Clarinda from Omaha in 2005, Dennis Boger has owned and operated D&D Treasures in the community since 2012. Boger says he's running for supervisor in order to give back to the community and bring his business skills to the county boardroom.
Running my business for over 13 and a half years, we have to deal with budgets. So I bring that ability and the ability to listen to people.
Two other candidates seek the 3rd District Supervisor's Republican nomination. A Blanchard native and a South Page High School graduate, Jeff Brownfield operates his own business, specializing in tiling, terrace, septic systems, and general contracting. Brownfield and wife have 2 sons. Brownfield finished last among 4 candidates seeking the 1st District Supervisor's GOP nomination in the 2016 primary, then lost to incumbent John Herzberg while running as an independent in November of that year. He finished 5th in a second run for the same post in the 2020 primary. Brownfield says he's running for supervisor again because of his business experience and his success as mayor of Blanchard, where he's currently serving his 4th term.
We have a lot of issues in the county. You know, like I just went through the jail the other day, and that jail's costing millions of dollars, and I wanted to see where they were at. And, you know, the sheriff run me through there, and we went through for a 2-hour tour, and he told me how everything was going to work and all that. And, you know, it was very interesting to set down what taxpayers' money is being spent on right now.
Brownfield's opponent, Seth Stimson, is a native of East River Township and a 1998 Clarinda High School graduate. Stimson attended college at Midwest Nazarene College in Kansas City, where he played basketball. After working in Kansas City for a number of years, he and his family moved back to Page County in 2022. Currently living in Shambaugh, Stimson is involved in church planting and youth sports coaching. As Stimson says, he's running for supervisor because he wants to get involved in county government and to serve the county's smaller communities.
I know there's people in each community in, you know, the ones I represent, for instance, Yorktown and Shambaugh and College Springs and Northboro. There's people in each community that love those communities, have been there for a long time, and want to figure out how to help their community or area thrive, not just survive, but to thrive.
Two familiar figures square off for the District 1 Supervisor's Republican nomination, including former Supervisor Alan Armstrong. Armstrong first joined the board in 2017 when he was appointed District 2 supervisor following Jim Richardson's resignation. Elected to a full term in 2018, Armstrong lost to current incumbent Todd Maher in the June 2022 primary and officially stepped down in January 2023. Armstrong says he's running for another stint on the board because of the voter-approved expansion from 3 to 5 supervisors.
I really enjoyed being supervisor. There were some tough months that we had issues that were a little bit confusing, but I really enjoyed the overall responsibility of being involved with all of the other personnel in the county, working on different committees within the Southwest Iowa. Those kind of items, those really were a lot of fun.
Born and raised in Shenandoah, Mike Anderson began his career as an officer at the Clarinda Police Department in 1988, then joined Shenandoah Police as an officer 5 years later. After 15 years of the force, Anderson retired in 2008, only to take the Essex Police Chief's job a few months later. Essex retired as Essex's chief in January of 2012. Anderson was among those losing to Roger McQueen in the 2021 Shenandoah mayor's race. Speaking at an April candidates forum, Anderson says he'll spend whatever time is necessary to help the county citizens.
I understand it's time-consuming. If you want to get a job done right, it's going to take time to get it done and to basically do your investigation to make sure you're doing it right.
Races abound in other KMA land counties. 4 candidates seek 2 Republican nominations on the Fremont County Board of Supervisors, including 2 incumbents. Born and raised in Tabor and a 1998 Fremont Mills High School graduate, Cliff Blackburn was the top vote-getter from among 4 candidates for 2 GOP nominations in the June 2022 primary. He, along with Dustin Sheldon, were unchallenged in the November 2022 general election. Blackburn says he's running for re-election in order to continue to provide a neutral voice on the board and the fresh perspective to problem-solving he brought to county government 4 years ago.
I don't come with an agenda or any, I want this particular hot topic or that or anything that we're pushing. Is I'm just kind of a neutral person that is usually able to work through a situation and figure out a common ground where we can win, and I thought that was a value that I can bring to the board and the residents of Fremont County.
Born and raised in the Percival area, Dustin Sheldon owns a cow-calf and row crop operation near Percival. Sheldon and wife Rhonda have three children. A veteran firefighter for more than 30 years, Sheldon has served as Sydney's fire chief since 2023. Sheldon was first elected to the Board of Supervisors in 2018, then re-elected in 2022. Sheldon says he's seeking a third term to continue the uphill battle in recovering from the epic 2019 Missouri River floods.
We've had a lot of rebuilding to do, and it's kind of made the job abnormal, to say the least, with finances and the tasks at hand. You know, we had so many miles of roads to rebuild, bridges to put back, people displaced from their homes. It changed the whole scope of the county on the western half, with people.
Also running are two challengers, including former Fremont County Supervisor Chris Clark. Born and raised in Hamburg, Clark graduated from Hamburg High School in 2003. Currently Sydney's assistant fire chief, Clark previously served as a supervisor from 27 to 2021. After losing a re-election bid in the June 2020 Republican primary, Clark was defeated as a Democratic nominee in November of that year. Clark says he wants to rejoin the board because he enjoyed his previous stint as a supervisor and believes he has more to offer the county.
The county supervisor job is actually a lot more difficult than most people think. You know, maintaining the budget is the biggest and most important part of the job. And a budget works in two ways, right? You have your income and your expenses, just like any budget. And I feel like we can't always constantly reduce our expenses or cut our budget back, because then we start cutting services.
Another challenger, Sterling Fichter, is a 2000 graduate of Fremont Mills High School and a 9-year volunteer in the Randolph Fire Department. While saying he's not a one-issue candidate, Fichter says he's running for Fremont County Supervisor because he opposes further growth of wind turbine projects, such as MidAmerican Energy's Shenandoah Hills Wind Farm, nearing completion in the southern portions of Fremont and Page counties.
I don't like the eyesores. I know it's divided the community down there, and I know there's nothing coming this way. MidAmerica has talked about they're not doing anything, so I get that, but I'd kind of like to just let's stop it right there for good should any more funding ever come down the road.
Another supervisor showdown takes place in Montgomery County as two candidates seek the Republican nomination in the county's 4th District, a position vacated by incumbent Mark Peterson's decision not to run for re-election. Dwayne Adams is a native of Wales, an unincorporated town north of Red Oak. He graduated from Red Oak High School and was a student at an Omaha technical school before returning to the area. Over the years, Adams worked at and managed several Red Oak businesses, including Traco. He also worked for the state of Iowa and as Red Oak Street Superintendent. Adams says he wants to have a voice in Montgomery County government and to put his experience to work for the county.
I know about the roads, what it takes to maintain them. I've done budgeting for many years. The budget at the window factory was over $30 million. I was in charge of it. And along the way, I've done a lot of rehab projects, actually owned businesses in Red Oak myself.
His opponent, George Arthur Bruce, has worked in the county as an IT specialist for 22 years. Bruce is the son of George Bruce, who lost to incumbent Mark Peterson in the November 2022 general elections. With Peterson declining a re-election bid, Bruce says he decided to run for the vacant position because he was concerned about issues such as eminent domain.
I don't know about you, but I know that driving around the county here and out in the country, there's a lot of signs, and rightfully so, you know, they don't want them. I mean, you're taking people's personal land that they've family land in some cases and saying it's okay to consume that just because of a few extra tax dollars. Now, I know the economy being what it is, but I think there's other things we can do. I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't seem fair or right to take things people have earned.
You can hear the results of these races and others on Tuesday's Iowa primary on election night in KMA Land Tuesday evening after 8:30 on KMA. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. With the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land is a presentation of KMA News.